GMT is just before 12:15 here in Hong Kong, somewhere mid-afternoon in Australia, where we join business futurist Maurice Misolowski. Happy Australia Day, Maurice.
G'day, Phil, and happy Australia Day to you.
G'day. Well, we had Jared doing all the Aussie tunes this morning, and boy, oh boy, it was all this nasty diddly-diddly pub music.
Was he singing them or playing them?
He gave me a bunch of tracks to play, and it was the real sort of the old digger music. It was great fun. But what I thought I'd talk to you about a little bit today was inventions and innovations that purely came from your island.
Yeah, absolutely. Would love to. And we have a history going back forever. I mean, perhaps one of our first inventions was the boomerang. And that goes back, I mean, who knows, 100,000 years or more. So we'd certainly claim that as one of our earliest innovations that have certainly seen the test of time.
But, well, the principle of the boomerang, I'm sure, has been used in other things as well. What were we talking here? A weapon, I suppose?
It was used primarily as a hunting tool.
Right.
I mean, absolutely as a weapon, but as a hunting tool primarily. And, of course, something that I've never tried too hard, but never been able to master.
I suppose it's one of those things that if you're really good at it, you're absolutely deadly and accurate.
I would assume so. I mean, most people that haven't lived in Australia assume that we need one every day to get rid of the kangaroos in our backyard. But I've never had that problem.
No, I'm sure you haven't. Well, I mean, there's a wonderful principle. I bet it came from Leonardo da Vinci or something as well before that.
Yeah, most probably did. But apart from that, we've had some really great innovations and inventions in Australia. In 1838, just last week, according to my children, 1838, Australia was the first country in the world to have a prepaid postage stamp.
There you go.
Now, it was invented in England the year before, but for some reason the post office didn't want to pick it up. They thought it was a very, very bad idea. Somehow it made itself out to the colonies. We started to pay for stamps in advance of using them. That was the big innovation. We were actually willing to pay for a stamp that we hadn't yet used. And lo and behold, the rest of the world now does it. And you and I talk now about whether stamps have any use whatsoever on the planet.
Well, so in doing so, were you guaranteeing that your letter got where it was supposed to be?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Remember, there really wasn't mail as we understand it today. Most of it was delivered by Cobb and Co. or by horse and cart. There wasn't a formal system. Australia had the beginnings of a postal system. England had one, of course, but there weren't many others around the world. So it was the first attempt at setting up this system of ensuring that a mail or a package or something that you sent would get to the other end.
Yeah, I wonder if it was put on in Australia because it's obviously just massive and these huge journeys sometimes that had to be made. So in doing so, you paid for a postal service that you could trust, I suppose.
Yeah, most probably. But again, 1838, not all of Australia was colonised yet. So we weren't really sending backwards and forwards as we may understand it. But you're absolutely right. There was vast distances. And also going back to the motherland, going back to England, I assume would have been really important. Now, about 20 years later, we followed this up, and this one amazed me, but I've checked it out a few times over the years, and it holds up as absolutely true. In 1854, a gentleman by the name of James Harrison in Geelong, Victoria, patented the very first refrigerator in the world. Quite extraordinary. Of course, it didn't work on electricity because we didn't have it yet, but it worked on gas. And his principles of how the fridge would work through the compressor, through liquefied air that circulated through coils, is still being used today in air conditioning and in some fridges. 1854.
I wonder how come then across the world people were still using cold boxes. Is that just because the message didn't get out of Australia?
It was a really, really expensive thing. In Australia, we were using cold boxes well into the 40s, so it's not as if it took off here. We're talking about a patent here, somebody that thought it was a great idea. Patents don't always make it into reality, and this one certainly took a long time. But the patent does exist, it does have his name on it, and there's clear evidence of really early boxes. Again, these were gas-driven boxes that he had invented. So 1854, we claim it. 1894, moving forward, was the first time in the world that we had powered flight. And it was first done in Australia, of course, by Lawrence Hargrave. And what he put together were a series of box kites, as you might imagine them, seriously, box kites. And he put in the middle of those a compressor. And he flew all of 5 metres. Now, in those days, of course, it was extraordinary. It was before the Wright brothers, before anything you and I now take for granted. Absolutely hadn't been done, still being dreamed about. And the first flight again, 1894 in Australia.
So, and once again, that it would be very difficult for a word of this sort of thing to get to really the other side of the world unless you know differently.
Yeah, well, you couldn't fly it there, that was for sure.
No,
so, I mean, at worst, it would have been by boat. But you're absolutely right. And we saw around the 1894 to about 1910, 1920, the Wright brothers and a whole lot of other wonderful people on the planet thinking about it. So what we see in all of these is really it takes somebody to take that first brave step. In 1906 in Australia, and this is one that's talked about quite a bit in Australia, is that we had the first full feature-length film ever in the world. It ran for 60 minutes, and it cost all of £1,000, which, going back 110 years, would have been a small fortune in those days.
And Morris, was this what they would have called? Was this a Western by any chance? Because
no,
I found out that they were called meat pie Westerns.
It was close to. It was a story of Ned Kelly. Now, Ned Kelly is one of our famous bush rangers here. He wore that iron mask, that iron headgear, and the iron body suit, and is a folk legend in Australia. He's really one of our folk legends. Many, many films have been made of him since. He, in fact, has museums and all kinds of things. But that was the very, very first talkie. 1906.
So that would have been more than one reel, surely, in those days.
Oh, it would have been. I actually don't know how many reels, but you're absolutely right. It would have been many, many reels. Remember that this was absolutely, of course, to state the obvious, a silent, absolutely a black and white sepia. You can imagine all the creaky, horrible things that we would now look at. But it was the first film. And from memory, they found, we don't have the entire film, but I think only a couple of years ago, they found bits of a reel. So there are small fragments of it left, but not the entire film.
I bet the rest of it is in somebody's attic in...
We hope so.
Something. It's one of those stories. Wouldn't that be
fantastic? It would be wonderful. And I do hear that story coming up from time to time. There's every couple of years, there's somebody that talks about maybe having found some of it. To my knowledge, we haven't found all of it yet. I've only ever seen fragments of it. But it would be extraordinary if we could. Now, in 1911, something that's very dear to Australians' hearts was invented by a gentleman called Gilbert Tolyon. And that was the Hills Hoist. Does that mean anything?
Not in the slightest.
See, in Australia, we have big backyards and we like to dry our clothes outside. The Hills Hoist was a clothes dryer. It's a pole, and the pole has a whole lot of other poles around it, a square on top, and it rotates in the wind.
Right. So, simplest things that we didn't know we need, and then you can't live without them.
But in Australia, it's the absolute quintessential. Every home, when you talk about a home nostalgically, you always refer to the backyard having a Hills Hoist. And then you know that you've got a size of a backyard that can actually house that because it's quite large. And you get that whole nostalgic thing about, you know, playing cricket in the backyard and hanging up clothes and mother doing things.
So, well, this is brilliant because it seems like we've reached a nice sort of crossroads here where things in the home needed to be developed. And so down the line we got the dryers and the washers and this, that and the other. And the other side of this crossroads is, you know, you mentioned the movie. So we're starting to talk about technology. Which one took over in Australia? Was it the home stuff?
Look, I think so. I think in many ways it was, although we've been pretty good. In 1928, a few years later, we invented, apparently, the pacemaker that you and I now are aware of and we think is quite ordinary, thankfully, for people that have heart conditions. Now, what we invented was quite a large machine. It again never went into popular circulation, but the patents are held for it, and it took many, many years and many incarnations for it to become what it is today. I don't know whether you saw the latest talking around pacemakers, but the size of it has come down in only the last couple of months. I have a brand new pacemaker around that is the size of the top of a pen. It's about, I think it's about 1.5 centimetres by about 0.25 centimetre. Very, very small and can be inserted into the heart. Quite extraordinary. Doesn't require as evasive a surgery to get it in either.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one, but it stands to reason this is going to be the way forward, certainly with things that need to be inside your body.
Absolutely. So we lay claim to 1928 for that. We move into the black box flight recorder in 1958, which is something that's talked about often. That was put into aeroplanes to figure out, in case of accidents, what might have happened and allow the plane and the pilot to record something. Unfortunately, if it's being used in perpetuity, in other words, after their death and after the crash, that we could figure out what's happening.
The interesting thing about that one was what's needed in this thing. Well, of course, it needs to record things, but it needs to be virtually indestructible and perish the thought. It needs to be able to withstand some serious impact.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that I'm always chuffed about, I mean, I know why it's called a black box, because the original one was, but they're not anymore, they're orange. But we still refer to them as the black box. Look, unfortunately, we've had a number of plane fatalities over the past few years. There are still many things, I think, from a technological viewpoint that we need to add in to our black boxes. We've got pretty good GPS. There's a whole lot of stuff that we need to put in there as ordinary. But it is an Australian invention. That's something that's talked about quite a lot. The other thing that's talked about a lot moving forward a couple of decades is the bionic ear.
Okay.
And the bionic ear came about in 1978 by Graham Clark. And it's an invention that's seen Australia do particularly well. The company that he founded eventually became a private company. It was part of the University of Melbourne to begin with, which is where this doctor came up with the invention. And that, through the last year or so, has had some issues on the stock exchange. There's been some issues with funding it. So we're still looking to see what happens there. And the bionic eye, of course, last year had a cousin come out, the bionic eye. And we're going to see more of that over the next few years.
And this is all coming out of Australia, so these are the things you never know about. Jared chucked in a song this morning called Yarra River Blues, and the significance of that was it was Ozzy's first stereo recording, and that was 1962. Do you know much about that side of things?
No, I don't. I mean, I know about the Yarra, but I've never heard that song before. I'm going to look it up. So the Yarra is the main river that flows through Melbourne where I live. So it's our central river. It's fairly brown, and we always refer to it as flowing upside down because it's so brown. But nevertheless, it is the centre of our town. I'm going to look that one up. Thanks for that.
Yeah, 1962, the first stereo recording. I mean, not, you know, it strikes me that that's a little bit late. I don't know. It's in the ballpark.
It may not be, because our industry really only kicked off around then. I mean, our whole music recording industry was really only late 50s, early 60s. So it wouldn't surprise me if that was right.
Well, let's take it up to the era that we like to talk about, which is the 80s, when the ground was being laid for a lot of the stuff we have today. Is there anything significant that fascinates you?
Well, one of the most significant things in the 80s for Australian was actually low-tech, high-tech, and that's polymer banknotes. Our money, the Australian currency, is actually plastic and was the first to go to plastic, or polymer to be correct. And the purpose for that was, one, of course, for durability, to make sure it lasted longer, but also because it was very, very, and is very, very difficult to counterfeit, and has been used now and sold throughout the world, and now used for American banknotes and all kinds, New Zealand, Canada, Papua New Guinea, all kinds of countries now use that as a basis. So we take that one. But one of the most fundamental technologies that Australia has invented and the world uses came in 1992. And you and I are on it right now. It's called Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Wi-Fi was an Australian invention that came from CSIRO. They hold the original patents for it, and in every circumstance are still receiving royalties from everyone, I mean, all the large companies that use it or its technology. So
was this one of those things that was developed in a different direction, and then people realised, hey, we can use it for that? Because I think I'm curious about the fridge one. If he was working on another project, and all of a sudden he found that he could chill his beer in it.
Look, I don't know about the fridge. I'll have to go back and ask him what his thoughts were when he did that. But I would agree with you. I mean, that seems that he was going down some road and invented something purely by accident. With this one, what they were doing was looking at radio waves, and they were trying to figure out how to get messages, just messages. I mean, Wi-Fi didn't exist, obviously. They weren't looking at doing it in any great sense, but they wanted to see whether they could throw some kind of a packet of information across a radio wave, because you and I know that we can do that by voice. You and I are doing it now. So it came from that notion, and then as they figured out that they could send what they called packets of information across these radio waves, the technology expanded to be what it is today.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap up today, Maurice, a couple of things. Obviously, Australia Day, there's all the talk of a republic. There's all the talk of giving, you know, the Brits the flick or vice versa, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it always happens at this time of year. So Google have put up a logo this morning. Not everybody's chuffed with it, are they?
No.
We can't see it here.
No, it's an Australian one. It's obviously based just for here, and it comes up with our searches. So Google does a wonderful thing for most cases, and that is that on any special day, New Year's Day, a religious day, whatever, for whatever country it's in, the banner at the top represents something about that country as a way of giving some indication of it. Now, for Australia Day today, one of the things that we are ashamed of and should be absolutely ashamed of is the way that we treated Aboriginals and what we did when we came to this country to take the land. Nothing good should be said about that, and we really do need to move forward on it. But Google has decided, as its way of making sure that we hear that message, that they would put up an image which represents the stolen generation of Aboriginal women having lost their children. Again, you know, no way do I support what was done. But I find that the putting up of this image and Google deciding that we need to have our cultural nose rubbed in it, I find that perhaps to be beyond Google's normal, reasonable way of doing things.
Yeah, I see where you're going with it. It's like, who do you think you are to do
this? Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they'll decide for the entire day. Everyone using Google in Australia will have to see this. Look, there's argument, and I've argued on both sides of the fence. You know, we need to keep being reminded of what we did. I get that, but we also, I think, could spend some of that image representing what's happened since in a more glorified manner. Perhaps a mixture of both, but maybe I'm being too sensitive.
Well, you're allowed to do that, Norris. Thanks very much for your time, as always, here on Morning Brew. We'll do it again next week, hopefully. That's not-